Today's episode of House of Strauss is brought to you by Game Time. Okay, folks, time for a little pop quiz. Do you think LeBron-less Lakers tickets are cheaper 3 weeks or 3 hours before the game?
You can find the answer with Game Time.
The ticket buying app that proves patience is more than just a virtue, bro.
It can save you some serious hate.
You can find the answer with Game Time.
Game Time is the leader in last-minute tickets. Pick your deal, see the view from where you're sitting, and buy in two taps.
Double tap, baby. Boom, boom.
More than 12 million fans have downloaded the Game Time app and discovered the fastest, easiest way to get into the game.
Guys, fellas, bros,
Jimmy and Vallejo, you know what it is.
So download the Game Time app in the App Store or Google Play. Work that clock to your advantage and score last-minute tickets.
That is the best pod I've ever been on.
That is the best pod I've ever been on.
The best pod I've ever been on.
Like, I just...
I'm still recording, Ethan.
Welcome to Warriors Wednesday on the Athletic Podcast Network.
He's one of the most misunderstood people.
He's a good teammate. He's a good person.
It's not fair.
I've had my own little tips with Ethan, okay?
It's not fair.
Yeah, dude, Ethan Strauss who come in here
to give his whole opinion on stuff.
That's the Ethan Strauss of the Athletic to address.
Grow up.
There was an article written by a young person named Ethan Strauss.
Been covering the Warriors forever.
He is an outstanding reporter.
He's large mad on our friend.
Ethan Strauss.
An interesting character.
Grow up.
He was like a little boy.
He was so scared to be even answered.
Uncle Son is a pretty damn good reporter.
Survey and then write something like that.
He's well respected.
Now y'all piling on me because I don't want to talk
to
y'all.
And I'm certainly not here to cast any aspersions on
him. He was so scared to be even answering the question.
He's one of the most misunderstood.
Misunderstood people. Hosted by Ethan Sherwood Strauss.
Question for Ethan and Conspiracy Game.
最后一件事，我特别想请问你们 Radio Ethan.
Hey, this is Sarah from Tulsa. I don't even have a question. I just wanted to let all of the Warriors fans know that there's plenty of room on the Clippers
bandwagon. That's great. That's a go. That's a guy you respect.
Hey, how's it going? Can you hear me okay?
What if China tries to steal the four-point line? What if they're trying to take Steph by bringing in the four-point line?
We are joined by the great Marcus Thompson of The Athletic, who has written some fantastic articles of late. We will discuss that, Marcus. How are you doing? How are things?
Man, I'm a little irritated, man.
What happened?
I'm trying to log into Skype, and it's just ridiculous. Well, I don't know why this isn't working.
Our sponsor, Skype. Do you want to have a conversation with somebody in India or record an NBA podcast? Skype.
What's up?
Hey, fake enthusiasm. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, anywho, we could let's just talk about the Jackie Mack Nets article, even though it has nothing to do with our purview or anything you've written about recently. But we both just read it, and I think it's an interesting subject because this article on the Brooklyn Nets, I thought it was very informative. I thought it was old school, and it was a great look at a team trying to figure itself out. It was a distillation of what they are dealing with, where they have a group of young guys and the young guys are completely buying in to the very rigid structure of the team. But now they've acquired these stars and these veterans who have their own way of doing things. And that's difficult to incorporate all into one thing that functions. And that's what the article is about. In addition to, from a Warriors perspective, how perhaps Kevin Durant was wooed over to the Brooklyn Nets. But that's not how the article was discussed. That's not how it was discussed over social media. That's not how it was discussed over television. In many ways, from what I could see yesterday, it was discussed according to Jackie being improperly sensitive to Kyrie Irving's mental health. I think that's the main way I saw it taken. How does that happen? What is going on? Marcus, your thoughts.
Where's the mental health part? Like, I missed it. I just read it, but because he didn't want to like participate and like, or is he taking mental health breaks and they're saying like he should get that? I didn't see any part that makes you think mental health.
I think it was there's something about him having funks and people relate to having their own funks. That's what I saw.
It's my life, right? It's two people talking, having a conversation.
A lot of people were talking about funks yesterday and their own funks. And this often happens where people I think they have their own baggage, whatever the subject, and they just bring that baggage to the article, and they unload it, and that's what happened. I guess it was the word so funk.
Because he has these funks and he disappears and he stops talking to people, the Nets are supposed to be like, oh, he's having a bad mental health day, let him chill.
If this is a real world, would it be anybody else's business?
Let him chill. Like, is that the...
I suppose.
Not anybody's business, right?
Yeah, $150 million, who cares? What matters, Kyrie, is how happy you are. That's the main thing we are focused on at the Brooklyn Nets. That's our main concern. And man, I'm the fans as well. That.
Like, man, I'm just about to straighten this. Every time, I used to get in trouble all the time with my bosses for disappearing. Like, they'll be like, we're trying to find you, and we can't find you. And it was like every year on a review, like, that would be the critique like, of me. They'd be like, you're great, man, but you know, we have these moments where we just can't find you. And usually it's like I'm doing some family stuff or, you know, I don't have my phone. Like, it's never nothing like malicious. It was just like, yo, man, I'm just unorganized. That's all. Right. So
can I say that sometimes we aren't meant to, as a species, be constantly found? That this is a new thing, and I hated it when I worked for, I'll just say it, Bleacher Report years and years ago, where there's this expectation that if I get texted at 11 p.m. that I am just wired in and on it, and I don't think that's how human beings should function. I don't think that's healthy.
That wasn't good for me. I definitely turn off work. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have other like elements that matter, honestly, more than work to me. So it was, I used to always, it was like a knucklehead kid who like gets all the good grades, but always had the bad citizenship grades. It's like, man, yeah, he's a great student. He's smart, but he's always disrupting class with his jokes. You just knew every time that's what it would be. Every review, that's what they would say. Like, hey, man, we just can't find you sometimes.
I would probably say what Durant said about Kyrie, about you. I would probably say I look at Marcus as somebody who is an artist. You have to leave him alone.
Can I get a friend? I need a friend like that. That was an excellent response, KD.
That
like,
was phenomenal. I loved that response.
You feel me? Like, let me do my thing. Let me cook. That was incredible.
I feel with KD that a lot of KD's commentary is done through the prism of KD, because he probably feels that way about himself as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because he's like, yeah, let me, like, this is exactly what I would want. Like, look, in the end, just trust I'm going to get the job done. And I've got a track record to prove it. The rest of the stuff, you shouldn't even worry about. Just trust that I'll get the job done. And, like, that's what I need. Of course, that life just doesn't work out for me. So that's why I was wondering, like, can we do that? Can we just say, yo, man, I need this as a mental health day. Y'all need to leave me alone. And everybody just understands that. Like, or do you have to, like, make that clear and, like, put that in writing? And, like, let's all work together and say, hey, man, when this happens, it's because I'm not in a good space mentally. And let's put some things in place so we can all operate. Or can I just ghost? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Just be like, yo, I'm out.
Well, we don't really know. I mean, Jackie doesn't have any commentary on any condition Kyrie has or any diagnosis. It's just when Irving lapses into these funks, he often shuts down, unwilling to communicate with the coaching staff, front office, and sometimes even his teammates. From their perspective, with a $150 million investment, that's an issue.
Yeah,
you know, the why of it is another matter. You know, I don't know why. I don't know. Kyrie
is
like
the
that.
Presumption he's got some kind of mental health situation when that happens?
I guess if you look at how people, some people who are journalists who are responding to it, I suppose that's their presumption. They could be correct about it. The bottom line is that the world doesn't necessarily revolve around how happy you are, how healthy you are. I mean, teams can pretend to care about it. Maybe that's one of the tricky aspects of the whole mental health discussion that I think was really put into the forefront by Kevin Love is – they have to pretend to care about it,
but they don't really care.
They don't really care about it. And really, some of these guys, they might look at Dennis Rodman in the past and go, this guy is great because he's unbalanced.
Right?
We are benefiting from how unbalanced and unhealthy this man is.
Let's take advantage, huh? That's incredible. You know my stance. Most people don't care.
No, nor should they.
I think all this care is like faux anyway. They don't care. I know nobody cared when I'm AWOL at all. Nobody's like, man, are you okay? They're just like, yo, you were supposed to do this.
Yeah, that's the way of the world. And if you're well, maybe the Nets fan base is the fan base that is the least passionate. So maybe, just maybe, they're the ones who actually care about how happy Kyrie is over whether or not the Nets are winning games. Maybe. Maybe they're the ones.
Do you have to be happy to do your job well?
Depends on the job. But mostly no.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good to be fulfilled. I think generally speaking, it depends on the job, but you should at least be fulfilled in the job in order to do your best work, I found. But that might be projecting what we do, Marcus, which is in some ways an intellectual pursuit, if you want to be pretentious about it, in some ways an emotional pursuit. I think we've both probably argued with our wives about how we need to be in a certain state to do the job. So maybe it's more true of us than other people.
Yeah, I mean, I believe happiness is an illusion anyway. Like, if you want to be happy, just go eat some ice cream. Like that's how long it lasts, really. If you're playing a job that you if your job is what you love, like, it's a little greedy, I think, to get to do this job that you love and to be completely happy off the court. Like, why do you get both? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
most people don't get to do what they love. And they have to find these pleasurable pursuits elsewhere. But man, when your job is fun, that's kind of cheating already.
That's why I'm of two minds in reaction to this. On the one hand, in my media brain, I'm going, man, I feel for Jackie because – and Jackie probably doesn't care. I mean, she's so stoic. She probably doesn't care at all. But I feel for somebody in this position because this happens to us again and again and again and again, where you write something that's nuanced, that's balanced, and one little sliver of it is aggregated and scaled up as the depiction of everything you were saying, and it's totally distorted. And now when you write, you have to write not just with the understanding of what an individual is going to take from it, but with an understanding of what an individual is going to excerpt from it and blast out to everybody. And this has to be part of the calculus. But then I think to myself, I guess that's just the cost of doing business. And yeah, that's frustrating, but it's way better to do what we do than some of the jobs I've had in the past. So who wants to hear my whining about it?
Facts. Or you could just like not be bothered. I think Jackie is like, I'm going to do the job the best that I can. I've been trained. I'm a legend, and I'm going to trust myself more than what, you know, the vocal choir of public opinion will say. And it'll be over, and then I'll write another article, and I'll do my best, and I'm trust that. So
yeah,
I kind of like Jackie's approach, which I'm presuming she has, is y'all can say whatever, man. I just gave it my all.
Yeah, yeah. Jackie is on another plane. It's impressive to me. She's not even on Twitter. She just doesn't. She doesn't even feel the need to. She doesn't have a Twitter account. Jade and I were
close to that, though. I'm close to that. I'm close to that level.
Oh. I don't believe you.
By close, he means very far away. Ethan, I have a question, though. I have a question.
What's up?
Because in the article, there's this part where I just texted you guys where she says it was
going swimmingly until Brooklyn dispatched its performance team to Santa Monica for an annual two-day mini camp with the players, which involved, among other things, gathering biometric data through wearables.
Irving, who has spent the past 9 years working with his own performance specialist, Robin Pound, balked. And then when the Nets gently urged him to participate, he didn't mince words, quote, I'm not doing it. So I'm wondering if there's something along the lines of these teams really buckling down on these players, as you know.
Yeah, I mean, he can have legitimate gripes with how things go at his work. And we don't know how effective all these wearables are or how much. I wouldn't presume to know. Right. I think that there might be. I mean, I would look at it as maybe just wear the wearable. If you're getting paid $150 million, I mean, it's not as though your contract is on the line if they detect that you're moving a little slower around screens. I mean,
your contract is not on the line if you say, I'm not doing it.
I guess that's the other thing. I mean, I guess that's what it is. That's the leverage.
Right. Like, that's what they've done. I mean, these dudes. Like, if you believe Kevin Durant, he didn't even tell him he was coming. He just picked them, right? And they're like, sure. Yeah, please come to our team. So at that point, you're basically saying, yeah, do whatever you want. The one thing, the article, I was wondering, like, I understand the questioning of Kyrie doing it, right, and participating, but man, shouldn't we question the biometric program?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Like,
potentially, yeah.
It's like Henry Abbott territory, you know?
Like, okay, I mean, I guess I get it when you're a bad team trying to become good, but when you acquire two Hall of Famers, it's like, yeah, why are you even asking them to do this? Like, what's your motivation?
If I'm the Brooklyn Nets, I might say, look, we're doing this because we're looking out for the players. We don't want another situation where...
Why would any employee actually believe that?
Especially Kyrie.
Well, maybe they wouldn't, but I'm saying if I'm the Nets, I'm going, look, we're looking out for the players. We don't want a situation like what happened with the Warriors where Kevin Durant's Achilles explodes. So we want to monitor how their bodies are doing, how much fatigue is there, so we know when to rest guys. I bet that's what they would say. I mean, do you think that there's some sort of nefarious motive underneath all that, or do you think that's the main reason they're doing this?
There's probably not a nefarious motive, yeah, but you telling me if there's information that will help them decide whether or not to pay somebody, they just won't use it because they said initially that's not what it's for?
Yeah, that it's not going to be part of what gets you traded.
There's this line, quote, I think it's from Marx, quote, they need to know the things we're doing are coming from a good place. It will never be used against them. It's not malicious. It's not. I mean, come on.
Yeah, Kyrie, your knee is deteriorating. We've noticed it. Your knee is deteriorating. But you know what? We're giving you another max.
You know how he thinks. He thinks differently, and I commend him for this. I do.
There's something funny when you say Marx, because I didn't read it that way, but I just it sounds like you're talking about Karl Marx.
It does, and, right?
each according to his wearable technology. I also think there's something to where, okay, maybe you guys have your heart in the right place, but it's all a little too much, right? If you tell me, hey, we want you to be in the best shape, and so we're sending a guy who's going to be around you at all times during the day and monitoring everything you eat, you know, at a certain point, it's yeah.
I saw they hired like a former Green Navy SEAL or something along those lines last year.
Huh.
That's cool. Do all that. That's fine. Have your program. Just don't go and get Hall of Famers.
I think I can understand both perspectives on it. I can understand the perspective of I have the leverage. I have the contract. You recruited me, and I'm not sticking this thing into my jersey and having you monitor everything about me every day. I'm not doing it. I get that. I understand that. I can see how it would be invasive. I also understand the perspective of this is us trying to help you, and we can't really help the players unless everybody is bought into this and we can see what's happening on a relative level with their bodies. I saw the Warriors did this, and they kind of gave up on it as far as I could see.
How much do you send to your work email? Like, how much, like, private personal information do you send to your work email?
Not a whole lot.
Why not, man? It's not malicious. That's right. They give you the email wasn't to hurt you. They just want to help you communicate, do your job.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'm trying to think, what do I even, I don't send too many emails in general now to think about it. I generally only use email for work at this point in my life. I can't think of other emails I send. Are you guys big emailers?
I was also, by the way, very curious in the China episode in whether or not this article could actually include maybe critiques on China that Kyrie may or may not have had. That's all speculation. But
see,
still.
I think you love Kyrie, Jade, and now you're projecting a whole lot onto
him.
I'm just saying.
Like, that's what I'm, you know, just there's something that, something else to this mood swing that I think is – or these episodes that might be at play here that's – they're being hinted at.
You saying he just didn't happen to get a mood swing in China, right? You saying there was some feelings he had there.
I mean, he gave one of the best, I thought, responses about the situation. Did you hear it?
I saw it, but I don't remember it being all that. It seemed as though it was. I don't know if I reacted to it.
We don't have
many
to choose from, though, Ethan.
No.
You know, when you think about communities across the world, I think that a lot of people would stand for world peace. As individuals, it's our job to stand up for what we believe in. Now, I understand Hong Kong and China is dealing with their issues. Like, there's enough oppression and stuff going on in America for me not to be involved in the community issues here as well. You know, when I think about Hong Kong and China, like, the people are in an uproar. And, you know, for us as Americans to comment on it, or if it's African Americans or American Indians to comment on that, you know, you're connected nonetheless, you know, especially when it impacts freedoms or world peace, like I said. So,
I mean, Shaq had the best one. I was in favor of Shaq's.
What did he say?
Oh, he was Shaq actually supported free speech. It was a good moment. Thanks, Shaq.
Wow.
Appreciate that, Shaq.
Thank you, Shaq.
And one of our best values here in America is free speech. We're allowed to say what we want to say, and we're allowed to speak up about injustices, and that's just how it goes. And if people don't understand that, that's something that they have to deal with.
Free speech, Ralph.
Free speech. It's hard to say.
One of our best values here in America is free speech. We're allowed to say what we want to say, and we're allowed to speak up about injustices. And that's just how it goes. And if people don't understand that, that's something that they have to deal with.
I really want an analysis of Marcus's day one day. I'm so interested.
Why does Marcus's day fascinate you?
He's
everywhere. I mean, Marcus is ubiquitous. Marcus is in Livermore. He's all the way down there in Santa Clara for the Niners.
I can give you my day. It ain't that hard. It's just, you know, it's tough.
Tough.
It's a full day, you know. I'm a grown man. I got things to do. You feel me?
Mm-hmm. You got a daughter playing volleyball. Stuff's happening.
You know what I'm saying? Life is happening all around me.
Do you ever see that Seinfeld where George pretends to be busy? You know that one?
Yes.
What do you do all day?
Not that much.
Uh-huh. I thought that new promotion was supposed to be a lot more work.
Yeah, when the season starts. Right now I sit around pretending that I'm busy.
How do you pull that off?
I always look annoyed.
I can't convince Allie that I have a real job. I can't convince her. I'm on year. I don't know. It might be a decade in, and it really doesn't matter that the paychecks keep coming, and it really doesn't matter that the mortgage is paid for. At the end of the day, it's a man on the couch watching basketball and talking on the phone.
I have the same issue.
So yesterday, let me see. Yesterday, I woke up 7:30. Right, started helping my daughter get ready. 8:15. I did a radio hit. Dropped my daughter off, 8:30, went to Blue Bottle, went back home. My check engine light came on in the car, so I took it back to the place I just spent $1,000 and was like, y'all need to fix this. Caught BART to San Francisco, did a podcast, caught BART back to the Bay, went to get another car, and then drove to teach class in Livermore, came back, picked daughter up for volleyball. Took her home, stopped and got some food or some errands for the wife who cooked dinner. I needed plates and all that. Got home, edited a couple stories for a few writers I mentor, watched the World Series, took a nap, woke up, wrote my article, and went back to sleep. There was my day.
It's amazing.
That's a full day.
He is busy.
That's a lot. I'm telling you, dude. Because Marcus, I mean, you only tend to see the stuff that Marcus does on basketball. He does more than just the NBA. So there's a lot there. Can we talk about your? One of the articles of the year is your Glenn Robinson III article about it's about Glenn Robinson III making a friend. Like, that is effectively what the article is.
That's where we are though in the world. We're like, this is major. That Glenn Robinson made a friend, right? Like,
I think there's a genuine hunger considering what you see as news, just to see human kindness and human strength is a nice thing to see.
You know what's impressive about it is, and I was just talking to him, and just the way he talked about everything he did was so matter of fact to him. And like, you can tell when people do kind things and they want credit for it, right? And they want you to understand like how big it was. And just in he's already kind of a mild mannered guy, kind of chill. But at every turn of his encounter, he did more than what he probably should have done or what anybody else would have done.
Could you sort of set up who is this friend that Glenn Robinson III made? How do they know each other?
I mean, ain't that what reading the article's for?
Yeah, but this is a tease. This is a tease. We're not going to give the whole thing away. This is like a movie trailer.
Let's see. Glenn Robinson III on a patio in San Francisco meets Celia Roberts. So basically, he meets this woman in his new place where he stays. And in San Francisco, there's like some kind of law where a certain percentage of the homes of new complexes need to be reserved for affordable housing. So somehow she, you know, lucked up and got one of the spots. So basically, there's this woman of very, very meager means who lives in the same place as his millionaire athlete. Right. So that's already an odd occurrence. So she meets him. They spark up a friendship, and she starts talking about this funny seasoning and she offers to cook for him. And the dude actually takes her up on it. And when he gets to her house, he finds out that she's very poor. So he ends up surprising her and doing a very good thing for her. If I tell you what it is that kill it? I don't know what kills it.
See, I don't know. I don't know. We'll leave a little to the imagination.
I don't even know. Yeah. Just tell them.
Yeah. 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 We'll, you have to read it. Read the article. Although, you know, the people listening are subscribers.
Yes. What are we doing? I don't understand.
Yeah. We can talk about all these things in theory. What I loved is that when he was over there, she still didn't know that he was an NBA basketball player.
I was very suspect about that too. I was like,
you were suspicious.
What she was saying, what? I was like, I mean,
you think that Glenn Robinson's a mark and this is her whole long play?
No, that's the only reason. Like, why did so? While she's telling me the story, and I'm like, you didn't know who he was for real. You know, I'm thinking about it, but I'm sitting here like, I mean, how would she know? Like,
yeah.
How would she know? I bet you diehard Warrior fans wouldn't be able to pick Glenn Robinson out on the street, but let alone like a working woman, single mom with two kids who probably didn't have time to invest in the sport like that. I was just like, first off, like, what the heck kind of college? She thought he was in college and he's living on a penthouse or something, right? Like, like what kind of college student do you think he was? If he's living like the top floor of this new apartment you're in.
Maybe USF.
I know, right? But when he was like, yeah, he was like, she kept calling me college student. I had to correct her. And I was like, wow, so she really didn't know. In hindsight, I was thinking, yeah, how would she know? But live, I was like, you didn't know? For real, you didn't know? But like, yeah, if she knew, that means she was thinking, yo, if I cook him a dinner, like, he's going to give me a bunch of money. And nobody – why would she think that, right? Like, that would be great.
We're so cynical that we're just looking at her like she's a groupie, effectively, like a manipulating
– I mean, I was – you know, I'm cynical. I was like, okay, so – but first off, like, I didn't find a story. Like, you know, this story – They told me, the Warriors told me, I had talked to Glenn Robinson at his locker. He was telling me about his foundation. And we were just chatting in the locker room. And he said he was starting a foundation. I was like, yeah, I'm always looking for good stories. And he told me the reasons behind it. So I was like, that sounds good. And then I got a call from the Warriors saying, hey, he's about to do this thing. Do you want to be there? And I was like, sure. But of course I go in, like, most of these charity things that these teams tell you about are kind of a ruse, right? And I don't mean that for the people who are receiving the benefit, but a lot of it is getting press coverage for very minimal work.
Yeah.
Right? They're not doing that much.
Yeah, if tomorrow it was somehow made impossible for any of this work to be public, I feel like teams would cut down their doing of it by 99%.
No question, right? I remember one time I did an event, and I just remember it was like a bunch of food a while ago. What was this? It was just a bunch of food being given out. I was thinking like, wow, so how much money did you spend? They never want to talk about money, but I ended up asking the right person and found out the player didn't even pay for it. Like, he basically was just there, right? And it was like some other organization provided the food, some other organization provided this, and the players just is the one who was there making the coup. Not that that's not nothing, right? But is it article worthy? Right? Am I going to write this? And so usually it's like that. So I'm always a little cynical, like, okay, what's actually being spent? Who is it coming from? Right? And who actually deserves the credit for what is happening right now? I don't want to minimize, like, when you're the person receiving it, it's a big deal to you. So it's not nothing. But if we wrote an article about all this stuff, like, that would be the whole publication is like going here and doing this. Right. Sometimes they just want a little bit more press than what's worthy. So I went not expecting that much and ended up like, wow, this is actually impressive.
I mean, it's impressive because she's impressive. I think she, in many ways, is the heart of the story.
No question.
That's what always gets me. There's something to just, I don't even know what to call it, everyday people, just the strength of people, the strength of people you've never heard of in your life, in how they face life and how they get the most out of life, that always gets at me. And I think it gets at a lot of people because you just realize A, there's so much good in the world, and B, there's so much struggle in the world at the same time.
So can we just, on the record, for all of the House of Strauss listeners to know, did you cry?
I did not cry.
You liar. You were a sobbing, red-nosed fool, like sniffling.
I'm reading it as another writer, though.
You were like...
I mean, I'm reading it with a certain aspect of detachment. I could tell that you'd written a good article, though, because you brought it up to me twice, and we have some internal metrics on how things are doing, and you were telling me about how well the story was doing, and I was like, oh yeah, okay. And then I started reading, okay, I see. This is an awesome story. I get it. Before, it was hard to draw me in, honestly. Before, I was going, Glenn Robinson III. I mean, it's interesting that this is doing well, but I didn't know what it was until I started reading it.
I just mostly wanted to show you that even though the Warriors aren't good, like, you don't have to give up on the Warriors.
Maybe not the people of the Warriors. I mean that's a whole other conversation.
I just wanted to show you that I've covered bad teams before, and this is possible.
Meanwhile, I'm planning to go see the Kings on Friday. That's what I'm trying to set up currently. That's a whole other thing in how we try to plan out our days. I don't know how I'm going to get there and get back. I mean, that's nothing of interest to the listener. But I've got to figure that out.
A little bit. I know you did. You definitely.
I mean, that's what you want to believe.
You at least had a nose burn. You at least had that stinging in your nose.
I'm not averse to crying. You know, I'm not averse to crying.
I believe it. I'm sure you married father.
Yeah.
I know you should. But I'm talking about off my article. That's the point here. Did I make you cry? And I'm going to go ahead and say, yeah. I'm sure Allie have had you sobbing on the bed.
Didn't you talk about that with Jordan Poole of what movies made him cry?
Yeah.
And he said Moana, right?
He said Moana. He said Pursuit of Happiness. And he said Moana's ready to go. But he said Pursuit of Happiness, particularly that scene where Will Smith's character is on the ground with his son in the BART bathroom, like trying to stop people from getting in because that's the place they're going to sleep that night. I mean, it's a very tear-jerking moment, so it's not surprising. But
Moana's a surprise.
Mostly, he but I don't know what he cried from in Moana, but maybe I need to watch
it. It was the You're Welcome song.
I know, right? I need to watch Moana again. My daughter loves it. I've seen it once, but apparently it's great.
Maybe it's the connection with her grandmother. Maybe that got to him in some kind of way. I just don't remember. You know, I remember in Frozen, there's some sad stuff in Frozen where the one sister wants to hang out with the other sister. Do you want to build a snowman? I mean, that's emotional. So I get it for Frozen. I don't get it for Moana. I don't understand it for Moana.
I don't remember the movie enough to remember the moments, but yeah, I don't get it either. I just remember it being like triumphant and victorious and, you know, feelings of inspiration.
Yeah, she's traveling. Yeah, she's out in the world. I mean, both Frozen and Moana, and this is a hot take, I don't think either are very well-written movies. I think that they focus so much on making great music and the plot is just some stuff that happens in between the songs.
I mean, in what great music makes actually a musical?
Yeah. No, I'm not saying they're wrong for how they did it, for what they prioritized, but it's not like Up or what's the other one? Inside Out. That's one that makes people cry is Inside Out.
Inside Out was tough. Yeah.
WALL-E.
I haven't seen WALL-E.
That's a good one.
What do you end up watching for Asher? Like, what do you end up watching because you have a baby?
Only basketball, and I don't think Allie is necessarily too into that. She doesn't like how he's going.
Hold on. You're not, like, watching cartoons and kid shows, like, just because you're with him and that's what he's watching?
No, because
I think – You just turn on Hoop, huh?
Well, that's because I need to watch that. But I think Allie would like it to where he doesn't watch – she doesn't like when he looks up at the screen and zones out. That's something that she's probably right about that too. It's just unavoidable where – I need to watch the basketball and I don't want to not be around, so I'm not going to go to the garage and watch it. So yeah, that's the only thing he sees though. I'm not really showing him anything else.
You know cartoons?
No.
No Yo Gabba Gabba?
No.
Yeah, I was on all that stuff. I hated Caillou. Yeah. You end up, man, you missing out on a major
you
part.
Get opinions.
You missing out on a major part of fatherhood.
Well, I mean, he's young. He's 19 months old. So eventually it's going to make sense.
Asher's only 19 months. It feels like he's four.
He's a big kid. He looks older. he looks older. But yeah, he doesn't at this stage. I don't know when I'm allowed to watch things with him or when it's bad for him. I have no idea. No clue. He likes watching the basketball. He says he'll point it and he'll go back at ball when it's on. So that's pretty cool.
If you're spending time with your kid, it's always a good thing.
That's a good rationalization. I need to use that.
Like if you just put the kid in front of the TV and go do stuff else.
Yeah.
That might be a problem.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Maybe, so, maybe something you're going to have to do.
Daughter. Yeah. Maybe that's going to be my problem.
Yeah. Watch out for those YouTube videos though down the line, Ethan. Ooh. Ooh. Those are bad.
Yeah.
And Minecraft, I find Minecraft weird.
Hey, what's up, listeners? Jimmy and Vallejo here. Crushing it at work like I am? Laser focused on beating that boss level? Doesn't mean you shouldn't eat. DoorDash can help you get your next meal from your favorite restaurants in minutes. Not only is your favorite pizza joint already on DoorDash, there are over 340,000 restaurants in 3,300 cities. So you might find a new favorite too. I like to experiment around, kind of check out the different spots, try to find that new favorite. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code Strauss. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code Strauss. Don't forget, that's promo code Strauss, Strauss, for $5 off your first order from DoorDash. Nosh on that grub, folks. Jimmy out.
Marcus, can we talk about an article that you haven't written yet but are working on? Is that something that we can't? Can we talk about the Ralph Walker? Because Allie was telling me when I was telling her about the Ralph Walker, that's when she wants to read. That's when she's excited to read. She was astounded.
Yeah. TK's going to hear this and be like, where's the Ralph story?
Ralph Walker is Steph's security guy. He was gone for a little while, but he's back. He's just one of these all-time great dudes. If you meet him, you like him. Allie knows who he is because we were on a Southwest flight once and Ralph happened to be on the Southwest flight and she was astounded when she learned that you knew Ralph as a kid. She wanted to know everything. She's like, what? Marcus knew him when he was a kid? How? I need to know about all this. So in my household, this is an eagerly anticipated article.
Yeah, I'm almost finished, but not quite finished.
Let's build some suspense for it. Let's tease.
So
the
great part about it is I've almost finished a letter I'm writing to a guy I grew up with who's now doing life in prison. That's what this story has produced. I feel like I'm one of these dudes I used to really play hoop with all the time, and in the open gym that Ralph used to run in my neighborhood. Like it just made me think about like what's he doing and. Finds out he's doing life in prison. So, but I hear he's people who know him say, you know, he's kind of a different dude. Like he's like at peace with the fact that he's paying his price, and all he ever says is, I don't want to see anybody in here. So I don't know. I'm kind of figuring out what I'm going to say to him. I'm almost finished with it, but I'm going to write him, because apparently he's asked about me a couple of times, which I find pretty interesting. So
how did you feel about him back then?
Man, he was my dude. He was cool. I mean, we play hoop every day practically. So he's a really nice guy. I mean, you know, we knew he was a savage, right? You knew who you were dealing with, but I never got to experience that part of him. He was always real cool. I remember one time just like playing hoop. You know how you like try to block somebody and you want to like really swat it so you swing?
Yeah.
And I remember like I was like, I just knew I was going to block this shot, and I swung to like really like kill it. And I think I hit him in the head, and I was like immediately thinking, okay, I'm about to die. Like, this is over. It's not going to end well. And he was like, yeah, play ball. He even called a foul. I was like, no, don't trip. I was like, oh man, did I just actually, you know what I'm saying? Did I just do that? But he was cool. So yeah, that's what's so weird about it. Like, I'm not surprised that that's where he ended up, but it's also a part I never saw. And I just never got to experience that. I always experienced like the cool part, which is tends to be how that goes, right? I know you have a theory about impulse control.
Oh yeah. You know, we've talked about this, where sometimes what separates people into the categories of what we consider bad people versus good people is just impulse control. It's just a skill. And so people are often shocked that this guy who did this or who did that is actually quite nice when they meet him. And it's not that they're deceiving you or that they're a con artist necessarily. It's just maybe they didn't have the impulse control or don't have the impulse control to stop from just seeing red and tipping over and just doing the kinds of things that you can't take back.
It's really crazy to think about. Like, and you know, I got people in my family who are like that. I mean, they're not like worthy of spending life in prison, but you could just see, like, you know, you don't want to mess with them or let them get a hold of some substance and then they become a different person. So I can kind of see it. It's still just weird. Like, it's jarring to me to compare the two, like the reality of what has actually happened and the person that I used to know as a kid.
Yeah. Well, I think that we build up that to do something like that, you must be this kind of person. And some people are that kind of person, right? For anybody who watches Mindhunter, there are people who probably fall into that category. But a lot of people, I mean, it was written about Gavin De Becker in The Gift of Fear, where he writes a lot about violence and how it happens. He talked about that, where you could go to a prison and you could see – he actually anchored a scene and the prisoner is having a funeral for a guinea pig, for a pet guinea pig, and the men crying over this guinea pig, and that these were some killers, and yet they had that in them as well. And it was his intro to talking about how it's – for a lot of people, it's just the ability to control impulses. And I mean, that's probably true when you broaden it out, where you see people who have cheated on their wives and they seem like pretty good people overall, but they've done these things in their lives that they can't take back, and it doesn't absolve the doing of those things. But maybe it's not that they are just 100% monstrous. They just can't prevent themselves from making the choice you can't take back.
So Ralph Walker, he's like the opposite of that. Yeah. Ralph is it's crazy too. The story is about essentially how Ralph couldn't stay away because his real life calling is to help like young men. Like, it's what he's best at. And I know he's a security guard, but he likes being in the position to be able to help young men. It's where he finds his value. He's been doing it for all of his life since I met Ralph when I was 12 years old. So he's been doing it for all these years. And the part that has always kind of enamored me about it, and it took me a long time, Ralph wouldn't talk to me about it on the record, right? He's like, I don't want stories. I think there was a story written about him, and they weren't really fans of it. I know the Warriors weren't fans of it. And Ralph, like, you know, he don't want to cause any problems. So he just like, nah, I can't do it. But when he retired for a year and I found out he was coming back, I went to his house, got schooled in backgammon, and he finally talked to me. And the odd part is just the similarities between us little, you know, traumatized poor kids in the hood and these super privileged rich kids in the NBA. You know what I'm saying? And how, like, the similarities, like, he could still do the same job despite the circumstances being so different. Like, they still need some of the same stuff we needed, and how it's not different even though they have money. That's the part that kind of, like, enamors me about the whole deal, is even though he's older, he's retired from the police force, he's still in this environment where you would think he's just there basically making sure nobody gets shot, but really he's there to help, and they need his help. Even if they might not know it. Ralph, yeah, because, you know, in my neighborhood, I know you told me that it's okay for me to, like, talk about this in the article. But, man, I couldn't. I was typing it out, and I just couldn't do it. You can do that in a way. I don't know why you can do it, and I can't, but I just felt like it was so much me and about me and not about Ralph. So, I don't mind saying it, but the story is about art. The article's about Ralph, right? So, me being all in it is different, right? Like, I tried. It just didn't make much in there, but. When I was growing up, I just remember I spent a lot of my youth very afraid, right? Like literally the amount of times you almost die become just this, you know, this guiding, like, force in your life. Like, you just didn't want to die. Right? That, I mean, it sounds crazy, but literally you're just afraid. How things escalated in the hood. Nothing was ever simple. Nothing was ever small. I remember when I was young, right across the street from my house, I'll never forget it too, because these two dudes were friends and they were high and something happened and the guy walked away and came back and he heard a noise in the backyard. He just started shooting, ended up shooting his friend, right? And then he had to go run. Nobody could find any. And it's just like, in the hood, man, things go from nothing to tragic in a blink. So I was always just like on guard. Like, I'm just always afraid. So, like, you can't just fight. There's no fighting, right? There's no like, all right, we just gonna go fight, because I'm mapping out. All right, if I fight and I lose, right, they probably just gonna keep beating me up, right? Like, okay, we can beat them up. And if I fight and I win, they gonna go get somebody, and I ain't got nobody. I'm the oldest of six kids, right? I don't have anybody. Like, my crew is like my younger sister. I got four sisters and a brother who was in diapers at the time. So I didn't sell drugs. Like, I didn't roll with no, you know what I'm saying? So I wasn't like, okay, you want a war? I ain't had that. It was just me. That's all it was. That's how I felt. It was just me. It was always just me. So I was always very cognizant. And Ralph was like the first dude in my life who made me, like, realize, like, smart was just as valuable as having a gun, right? Smart was just as valuable as having money. And you spend so much time trying to prove you not soft, right? Trying to prove that you aren't a pushover and a punk and not letting people take advantage of you. And that's kind of like the universal code. But, like, Ralph was the one who showed me, like, you can use wit just as well as somebody else can use other stuff. You know, I watch Ralph de-escalate situations like with just using straight guile. And I was like, yo, and he made, like, what Ralph really put me on was game, right? He made me figure out, this is what we call it. We call it a game. Like, you could manipulate situations and you can use, like, your understanding of how things work and how to operate and just kind of manipulate and maneuver stuff. Like, that's when I learned how to do that. was like Ralph, because I wasn't good. I could shoot. I was really good shooting corner threes, right? We had these 3-point shootout. I always win trophies from hitting. I would just, you know, run back and forth from the corners and just keep hitting them threes from the corner. But I wasn't that good of a player. But, you know, every coach I've ever had was like, yeah, whatever, because I wasn't good. But Ralph was the one who was like, yeah, but you smart, right? So, like, he invested the time. Like, he knew what was up. Like, you just knew you mattered to Ralph if you were smart. Like, if you had a good head on your shoulders and you were doing well, like, you mattered. In every other venue, you had to be a great athlete or a baller in order to matter, right? So, but just understanding, like, how to navigate, like, how to impress people, right? How to just all that stuff. Like, Ralph used to always talk to us about it. He used to always say, man, this is, you don't want to do this. You don't want to be seen saying this. Like, if you do this, here's how people are going to view it. And, like, just all that kind of wisdom he was pumping in, he just made me really comfortable with, like, all right, I'm not about to walk around here scared. I'm going to outsmart all y'all because I'm smarter than everybody, right? That's how I used to think. Like, so if I'm in a situation, like, all right, I'm going to get out of this with my wit. Like, or I'm going to survive with my straight brain. And, like, he was the one who kind of inspired that. He just made it cool. That's what he did. Like, it was – Ralph was hella cool, and everybody liked Ralph. It was crazy, too, because you just knew you hated police officers. But Ralph wasn't like a police officer, even though he was a police officer. So that was the weird part. It was like, I mean, we had this thing in the hood. I don't know if you noticed, but on police cars, there's like an E on the license plate, right? Like on, that's how you could tell if like an undercover car is a cop car or not, because there's a E in like a hexagon or something on license plate.
I don't think I've ever looked at a police car's license plate.
So I just remember like whenever police was around, it was like your duty to scream like it would be Popo or 5-0, but then like, you know, you don't want to get caught, you know, being a, like if the police saw you alerting people, you can get in trouble for that, right? So if you just like 5-0, 5-0, right, and they caught you, you was alerting people and they could probably take you, you could be in trouble for that. So one way people used to do it was they used to just scream Elroy, right? It'd be like, Elroy. I used to be like, why y'all saying Elroy? Well, I don't even know what is Elroy. Who is Elroy? And Elroy was the Jetsons' son. So I'd be like, the Jetsons? Why y'all talking about the Jetsons? But but that's what I learned, like this, the little E on the license plate. So that's how you knew police would come. That's just was the culture. Like, you just didn't mess with police at all under no circumstance. And here Ralph was in the hood. Like, everybody knew Ralph. Everybody loved him. Everybody hung around. Like, he was there every day. Not without fail. He was in the hood every day. And he was just cool. And the way he operated using his brain, for me, made it cool. That was like, okay, that was my confidence piece right there.
I'm trying to keep track of everything he did for you. It seems like he validated something in you, because when you're young, you don't necessarily know what you're good at, right? He gave you an alternate way of being proud of something that was less destructive and more positive. I'm trying to keep track of the whole thing. And he gave you some behavior to model, it seems, because Ralph was like that. I mean, have you ever told him any of this? Have you ever told him this?
Man, well, we black men, we don't be sharing emotions like that. What you talking about? Nah, Ralph, no. I told Ralph. I wrote when Ralph first came and I was at Bang, I wrote about it. Like, I wrote a personal thing. Like, let me tell you about Ralph and who he was to me. We just knew Ralph, like, you know, I'm telling you, like, it was crazy, man. Like, looking back on it, I don't know how it never got worse than it was. I'm talking about like killers, drug dealers, like people from out of town, like everybody came to this gym and you knew who you're messing with. I remember one time this one dude was like, man, the next person fouled me, I'm a fire on him, right? And it's like, all right, whatever, he mad. Some dude fouled him, he just turned around and poof, popped him right in the mouth. It was like it could pop off at any moment. Then he got kicked out of the gym and blah, 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 blah. It was just like, it just felt like with the crowd that was in there, something was always ready to go down. And it never actually got that bad, which I think was a credit to Ralph. And eventually I went to college. Ralph moved on. Somebody else ran it. So I don't know what it was like after that. But that's, I just feel like he kind of set that tone. And I just remember we played for police, you know, it was PAL, Police Athletics League. And we played my first time, like, leaving the Bay. We went to a tournament in Santa Monica. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I rode the bench and all, but you just knew, like, you were, it was okay that you weren't good. Like, cause he was, all he was doing, talking to like the ballers, like the good players, was telling them what I already knew. Like, he telling them, you need to be like Marcus, in essence, right? Mm-hmm. So it was like, you know, that was like, all right, yeah, y'all need to get y'all grades together. Y'all trash. You know what I'm saying? So, and I'm being there in my report card like, what? Y'all can't see me. You go ahead and make them threes, and I'm going to get these A's. That's funny.
I think it's amazing. I can't wait to read it. I don't know how much of yourself you're going to put into it. I'm thinking right now I need to disappoint Ralph less. I feel as though I always disappoint him because he's just so big on – he's almost like a monk where he – if you know him – he does not look his age. He's in perfect shape. He does this crazy push-up and sit-up routine every day. He's always asking me. He's always asking me if I'm doing my push-ups, and I don't know. I mumble something or run away. I feel like I'm letting him down.
You are letting him down. But you know what? It's okay because he's never going to give up. He's going to keep asking you. Ralph is crazy. Like, there were some dudes, like a couple of my cousins who were total knuckleheads. And Ralph, like, you know, when I left and went to school, like, he was working with them. And a bunch of the youngsters, like, he still keeps in touch with them dudes. It's crazy. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm talking, this was from, like, 99. And, like, he still will catch up. And he'll tell me about people from our neighborhood. You know, and it's like, yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't know where these people are. You know, I haven't been in a long time. But he still talks to them.
Yeah, well, he lives in East Oakland, right? That's where that's where he's at right now. Yep. Yeah, I don't.
And
give
his
too
wife,
much
by the way, his wife was also a police officer, and we used to all have a crush on her when she would come. And her name is Angel. We'd be like, "Ooh, Angel!" And he'd be like, "I'm looking at my wife." We used to love Angel.
Put that in the article. Put it all in the article.
We used to love Angel. That's funny.
Oh man, well, I can't wait to read it. Jade wants us to take some calls apparently, but yeah, hey, everybody read Marcus's work and also spread the word because we like getting subscriptions. Tell your friends who aren't subscribed. What are they doing? They got to subscribe already.
You're a great pitch, man.
Ooh, that was some good stuff right there. That was some good stuff.
Jade saying it like he walked away.
I've been manufacturing calls over here.
he didn't hear none of that. He was like, oh, that was good. Great job.
Great, fantastic.
Yo, Marcus, this is Zeke. My question today is, do you think the Warriors could run an efficient offense, a Mark D'Antoni style offense, with Steph hitting the Harden level usage? And do you think that's a possibility with her as a coach? Appreciate it.
What's the Mark Anthony offense?
I think it was Mark D'Antoni. Sorry, Mike D'Antoni.
Mike D'Antoni, Mark Anthony.
Mark Anthony.
Mark Anthony.
I can't name a single song by that guy. Heard of that guy.
Not one?
I can't name a single one.
I can't
Not
either.
Not one.
I can't either, Ethan.
Wow.
I think if I heard one, I'd know it. Right? There was
Is
one
he the
big
most
hit.
Famous musical artist where I can't name a single song by him?
Yes, he might be.
Wow. What is that? Why is that? I mean, anybody else I could name a song or at least sing a little bit of it if you name them. Here's what I think. I could be wrong. I tend to have some respect for Kerr's perspective on what wins. I think he knows a little bit more about it than maybe some of the criticism would make you think. But I do think he also has an aesthetic preference. And I have to wonder, is this reluctance with Steph rooted in the aesthetics versus just the pragmatic math? I think according to the math, you'd probably be better off having Steph shoot more pick and roll, selfish, simple basketball. That's what I think. What do you think, Marcus?
I agree. I agree that he's right. Right. And he has a good reason And I think he just had the reason lines up that gives him the out, because I think he's right in that if you told Steph to do what Harden does, like you're basically putting him at risk to get injured. Like literally, like Steph is 185 pounds and 6'3". And one thing we've learned over this like 5-6 year stretch is that it definitely does matter, right? You can take 6'3", 185 out the game. Right. Like you can affect them physically. So I do think he's right, but I also agree, like his reasoning is not just purely let's protect Steph. We don't have the roster. It's I don't think he likes it. I don't think he likes the one on one, the dribbling, and everybody standing
he doesn't like how the Rockets play. I mean, he wouldn't say they should do it a different way, but I don't think he likes it aesthetically. I think he said that after the series, that the series was one of the most aesthetically gross things that he had ever seen.
But I think Steve Kerr is good enough and smart enough to know it's not a black or white thing, right? It's not like, okay, we're either going to run this 300-pass offense or it's pick and roll. Like, there are other ways to get the ball to your star and get them the looks without those two options. I understand that's the primary one, but you can mix it up. You can vary it. Like, there are things you can do. And I think he's relying on transition to get him those looks that Steph, you know, can create and do it on his own. Like, he wants it to be a part of the flow of transition instead of calling it. But I do think it's a little bit more of – we know Steve Kerr can be a little stubborn, right? He likes what he likes, and he's won enough games to where you kind of got to bend to that. And I feel like he has earned the right, but he definitely gets in his own – he gets in his head like he doesn't want to do something or he doesn't like this player or whatever, or he likes this player and that's that. I think this is one of those situations where he just doesn't want to have an offense that looks like a street ball game. Like, he just doesn't want to do it. It's his get off my lawn approach.
Next.
Sorry, I actually forgot something we have to do after the show, Ethan. But I did want to play this. You know that song, Ethan?
I think so, but if you played it for me, I would go, oh yeah, that Carlos Santana is exactly. Just, woo!
That's totally, it's a Rob Thomas ripoff. You're totally right. It's I Need to Know. I Need to Know. That was a big hit. All right, here we go. I think we got a call from Egypt.
Ashlan, Ashlan, Ethan, and Marcus. This is Mustafa from Egypt, your biggest fan in I have a question about the Warriors.
Hey guys, it's Dan from Richmond. For the rest of House of Strauss with Ethan and Marcus, go to theathletic.com. Subscribe for a bunch of exclusive content, including your voicemails. Yours and mine, most importantly. Go to theathletic.com, search House of Strauss. If you're not a subscriber, use promo code NBA Tipoff for 40% off. That's theathletic.com/NBA Tipoff. For 40% off a subscription to The Athletic. Trust me, you won't regret it. See ya!
Do they say, call us, we're done, we're pulling the plug, this is not good. We're not going to be good. We're going to tank the season, you know?